our 10-minute speaker, and that would be David from San Maria.
My name's David, not Pollock. It's an honor and a privilege to be here tonight. I was asked by my sponsor to be a 10-minute speaker, Leo, and I felt great honor in him being able to have enough in me to ask me to do that for him. Most speakers come up and share their what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. I do have a drunk log, but I'm not going to get into that too much. I have a sobriety date, which is February 17, 2012, and relapse is part of my story. I came into the rooms in 1990 because I had a lot of people on my back, and they said I was a better person when I didn't drink. So I came into the rooms hoping I would never drink again, and I had a conquest not to ever drink again, but I wasn't willing to do the things you told me I needed to do that. So I took the little bits and pieces of that and made it work for me long enough to keep, or well enough so I wouldn't have to take that next drink. But I got to tell you, my life was miserable. I was out there fighting the fight, trying to get everything I could in my life. As far as wealth goes, as far as prestige goes, I'm a very prideful person, so I wanted to be prideful of everything that came across me and do it to the best of my ability. And it looked good on the outside, but I was dying inside the whole time. And this went on for quite a few years. I came to the rooms for about 9 years, maybe a meeting a week, usually a speaker meeting because I knew I wouldn't get called on. But if I did get called on at a meeting, I just said what you guys said in other meetings. Identified as an alcoholic. I knew I was an alcoholic, but I didn't feel that I was really an alcoholic like you guys. You guys have done a lot worse than I have, is what I had in my mind, you know, because I really didn't want to look at David, and I wasn't going to look at David, and you couldn't tell me to look at David, and that's what I felt these steps were telling me to do, is that you were making me do this so I wouldn't have to drink, and that was my whole attitude. After 9 years, I figured, you know what, I haven't drank yet, I got this. And I moved on to other ventures. I moved to Colorado, became a firefighter, and that was going to be my new incentive not to drink. As long as I was fighting fires and helping other people, God was going to help me not drink. Now, mind you, I would pray before I went into a fire, but I didn't really believe in God. But I heard other firefighters doing it, so I just followed along with them, you know, because it was what they did. They prayed right before they went in. So I wanted to look good for them, too, just like I wanted to look good in the room. So I'd pray every time I went in, not believing a word I said. Even when I was at my worst days or in my worst times, I'd make these little prayers and then turn around and think, yeah, that's not going to get answered. There's really not a God out there, you know. How can a God make all these bad things happen in the world that are happening, you know? So that was how I looked at life. And I thought, like, if I did that, then I wouldn't have to believe in a God. I wouldn't have to be thinking of this punishing God that everybody always talked about. And my grandmother said that was, you know, you're going to go straight to hell, David, because you're a bad kid, you know. And I didn't want that God. Who wants that God, you know? And this guy ain't going to have him. So long story short, I quit going to meetings. I did that. I quit doing that because of my mental state as a firefighter. I couldn't take the emotions that were involved. I had a chief that was off the wall on as far as what he considered was safety equipment and so forth. And so many bad things happened as being a firefighter. My spirituality just broke me to the bottom. Came back to California and played it out for a few more years. And I was out on a vacation in Fiji with some friends of mine that didn't know me when I drank before. And I was sitting on a dock, and they said, hey, Dave, you want a beer? And I told them, you know I don't drink. And they said, you're young then. You can handle it now. And that quick, I took that beer in my hand, and it was on for 8 more years. I drank pretty heavily for 8 years. My last drink, I was laying on the floor of a trailer, and I prayed to a God that I finally wanted to believe in. The light was shining on my face. I knew where to come, but I was afraid to come in the doors. I was afraid I was going to be judged by you people. You guys would judge me, and I couldn't have that either. And it wasn't until another person said, hey, I was talking to this guy last night, this NAA. He's a Mexican guy, wears a lot of gold jewelry. And he says, maybe I should give this thing a try. And I go, hey, I know those guys. I'll take you over there. You know, I went to the 1600 Club, waited outside. That person never showed up. So I actually didn't go into that meeting, but I sat there all day because I wanted to go in those doors. I wanted to, and they were training over there. And I had never been to the 1600 Club before. I was on Cook Street back in 1990. They had a little club over there. It was about half the size of this room and short. And everybody smoked, and then you walk in, you had to duck down so you could see who was in the room. But, you know, that was, it was the seed that got me back in. So I'm very grateful for my experience there, that I actually came in the rooms back then and did hear some stuff that I didn't want to hear, but I still locked it in there. And it gave me enough to know that when I came, that I wanted to come back, and when that person said they wanted to go, that God gave me the opportunity to walk, to come back into the program. When I came back, I actually, you know, the first time I walked in, the second time I crawled in, I had nowhere else to go. It was the end. I was living in a trailer. I had four kids. Only one would talk to me. I was bankrupt, completely bankrupt, inside and out. And I crawled in. I started listening with an open heart. I was willing. At this time, I was actually willing to do whatever it took. And they said, you know, I remember him saying, you got to get a sponsor. So I listened for a couple months, actually. I listened to people talk. I listened to people talk, and I finally heard somebody say something that interested me, and it was my now sponsor, Leo. So I nervously went out to a car where him and Jack were standing, and I asked him to be my sponsor. And that was the greatest thing that could have ever happened, because he immediately showed me that I could do this, because he wasn't, you know, I didn't feel that he was making me do this. He was loving and kind. And he said, if you really want to do this, I can show you how to do it. And I said, I really want to do this. He goes, well, the first thing I'd like you to do is just show up tomorrow, and I'll be here, and we'll go over, I'll give you my phone number, and we'll get this thing started. So we did. He started taking me through the steps the way he was taken through. You know, and another important fact I want to tell you is I knew in the sharings I heard about his sponsor, and I heard other people share that they wanted to pick a sponsor that had a sponsor. So that was important to me, too, to find somebody that had somebody backing them up. Because that's kind of the biggest part I got out of firefighting was you never go in without backup. And I needed him to be backed up in case he could handle this alcoholic. Because I thought I was going to be a special case, you know, that he's going to have to take some special work to get this alcoholic straightened out. But unbeknownst to me, he had been working with a lot of other people that are just as bad as I am. And that's a God gift to me now. He's taken me through the steps. One by one, you know, I kept looking down at 12, and I wanted that spiritual awakening, and I thought that lights were going to flash when it happened, and the skies were going to open up and so forth. But I learned that the only way I could get to those is by going through each one of these steps to get to that spiritual awakening. And my spiritual awakening wasn't flashing lights, and it wasn't lightning bolts and the skies opening up. It was what I felt inside, that spiritual feeling in me that I knew that I could walk through anything that God put in front of me. I ask God every day to just, you know, let me know what I need to do. You know, let me walk through today, and we'll talk about tomorrow when we get there. Now I got into service immediately when I got into here. I took a coffee commitment over at the old Villano Club. They trusted me to carry some cash around to buy coffee with. And, you know, there was times when I didn't have money when I did that. I needed some gas in my truck, but reading the book and talking to my sponsor, I learned that wasn't the right thing to do. You know, you couldn't borrow that money. You know, that was money that was designated for something else. So you can learn how to live life in here, too. You know, when another guy had shared that early on in his days, he had walked by a convertible with some cassettes in there, and he didn't take them, so he was so proud of himself, and he went and told his sponsor, hey, I didn't take the cassettes out of that car, and his sponsor says, you're not supposed to. That actually happens to me all the time. There's things that happen, and I start feeling really proud of myself, and I think of that story that I heard in these rooms. You're not supposed to do that, so, you know, don't be patting yourself on the back. Be thankful. Be thankful that you know that now, you know, rather than patting yourself on the back, because that's what I always did. I always patted myself on my back. So those are things that had to change with me. Getting commitments in this, I've been IGR, GSR, a chair. I love being in service. It's part of who I am. Then the biggest part of the triangle I like is actually upside down. The more I do, the less I am. And that, for this alcoholic, that's important, because I always strive to be taller. You know, they say the bottom of the totem pole is actually the king's on the bottom, so we don't want to be the bottom anymore. We want to be on top of it. And that's where I try to stay, on top of the totem pole, and be as maximum service as I can. One thing I'd really like to say before I set up is that I owe all this to my God, a God that I believe in today, a God that I cherish, takes care of me. He's loving and kind. He's not punishing. He doesn't test me. I mean, I don't test myself, you know. I stay out of situations that I feel might test me. That's real important to me because before I thought, well, I can handle that, I can go there, I can do this. I don't test myself anymore. I attend a meeting, usually one a day, sometimes two. And I did slack off for a little while. I felt it inside, you know. And luckily, I had a sponsor that could see it in me too. You know, he recognized it and he says, you know, you do better when you go to meetings. And I go, you're right. I do better when I go to meetings. So I got get back involved in doing that. The service wasn't just enough. I thought, well, I do a lot of service. I don't really need to go to too many meetings. And you know, and he also pointed out that 12-step work is actually showing up to a meeting, and that's part of what we do. We have to give back what's really given to us. You know. I owe everything that I have today to this room and the people in it, not to me, but my God and what he presents to me and what I hear from the people in these rooms. Without you guys, I'm nothing. I just don't have it. I can't do it alone. So I thank you for being here. Thank you for being part of my recovery. And thanks.
All right, thanks, David. Let's give him another hand.